This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.
Welcome to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of The Tonic newsletter, Jamie Busson.
Hi, I'm Jamie Busson. I'm a former commercial litigator who used to weigh 242 pounds. When I was 38 years old, I lost over 50 pounds through a regimen of exercise and better nutrition. It took me a year to reach my goal, but I thought if a type A personality like me could do it, really anybody can. I'm still asking questions and learning about what it means to live a healthy lifestyle. Please join me on this continuing journey. Today, we'll discuss the GLP-1 revolution with master herbalist Joel Thuna. We'll find out which viral wellness trends are worth trying with wellness industry insider Lindsay Walker. We'll discover that you're not getting older, but you are getting weaker with husband and wife personal trainers Ilya Alsok and Alicia Perez-Alovskaya. And lastly, we'll learn why high achievers fall apart with clinical psychologist and author Angelica Perez-Litwin. Before we get to that, here's your tonic quick shot. Researchers at the University of Kentucky have made an important discovery that could lead to new treatments for Alzheimer's disease. Their study found that the brain's immune cells, called microglia, may be responsible for sleep problems that often are experienced by people with the disease. For many years, scientists believed that sticky protein clumps called amyloid plaques cause sleep loss. However, the new research suggests that it is the immune cell's reaction to these plaques that disrupts sleep. In tests on mice, researchers temporarily removed most of the microglia using a drug. As a result, the animals gained more than 2 extra hours of sleep each day, even though the plaques remained in their brains. The study also showed that Alzheimer's mainly affects deep restorative sleep, which is important for memory, learning, and clearing waste from the brain. Researchers believe that improving sleep by reducing harmful immune activity could slow brain damage and improve quality of life. They are now testing existing medicines to calm overactive microglia, offering hope for future Alzheimer's treatments. Question: what's the best way to make sure you're getting the most up-to-date and accurate health and wellness information? Answer: the Tonic newsletter, of course. Visit www.thetonic.ca and sign up today. I'll be joined by Joel Thuna in a moment, but first, a little bit of business. Feeling tired, low on energy, or simply not getting enough vitamin B12? Discover the difference with Purely Organic Active B12. Made with premium active methylcobalamin, the natural form your body absorbs and uses instantly. Unlike common synthetic B12 supplements, Purely Organic Active B12 contains no colors, flavors, sweeteners, or preservatives. Just clean, organic, vegan support for energy, endurance, and nervous system health. Purely Organic Active B12. Pure energy, naturally made in Canada. Joel Thuna is a master herbalist and general manager of Purely Natural. He strives to improve the quality of natural products on the market and passes along his knowledge of herbal remedies through lectures and articles. He's also a frequent guest on this show. Welcome back, Joel. How are you?
I am doing awesome, fantastic, incredible, and happy to be here.
So we're going to talk about GLP-1 agonists today.
Yeah.
Slightly different perspective. You call it a revolution. I tend to agree with you. I think it's more like a tsunami than a revolution, but definitely I think everybody knows somebody, perhaps at least one, probably many people who are on it right now.
Oh yeah.
And I think it's important that we understand as much as we can about it. Mm. So what exactly is GLP-1 and how do these medications work differently from the body's natural GLP-1 hormone? Because we do produce it ourselves.
Correct. So listeners probably know these drugs by their brand names, Ozempic, Wegovy, Mounjaro, and there are other ones. So GLP-1 stands for glucagon-like peptide 1. And as you said, it's a naturally occurring hormone that normally is manufactured in our gut. Normally, your body secretes GLP-1 in response to food intake. Its primary function is to signal your body, different organs, that there is what's called nutrient abundance. You have nutrient abundance, you stop eating because you don't need to anymore. The difference between our natural GLP-1 and pharmaceutical GLP-1 agonists are that the drugs are highly sophisticated synthetic molecules that are designed to mimic the hormone. Critically, while natural GLP-1 is broken down by enzymes in your body in a matter of minutes, GLP-1 drugs resist degradation and they circulate in your body for days, so they have a much longer effect.
There are three key ways that these therapies affect the body. There's blood sugar regulation, delayed stomach emptying, and appetite control. Can you walk us through those mechanisms to see how they work together and support weight loss for metabolic health?
Sure. So, for example, the blood sugar regulation, that happens through regulating the pancreas. What it does is they stimulate your pancreas to release insulin, but key here, only when blood sugar is elevated, at no other time. And what this does is it prevents your body from having those blood sugar spikes when you don't want them. At the same time, they prevent your liver from releasing unnecessary blood sugar into your bloodstream. Together, they both mute the spiking. On top of that, these drugs delay gastric emptying. They physically slow down the rate at which food leaves your stomach. By prolonging this, they make you feel full, not just longer, but also they make you feel full after eating significantly less than you would normally feel. And the last thing they do is they work with central nervous system satiety. They cross your blood-brain barrier to switch off your brain's hunger noise. And what that does is it reduces cravings.
So the medications were originally developed for type 2 diabetes management, but are now obviously really used by a lot of people for weight management and cardiovascular health. How's that role evolved over time?
So it's actually quite interesting. It's probably the best example I personally know of where widespread use of something, all of a sudden we figured something else out. So as you said, originally they were tested for type 2 diabetes.
Right.
And they showed amazing results, incredible promise at a very safe level. And that was incredible. What they then found was that once they got regulatory approval for that and it became widespread, they found that, oh, not only does it do this, it also gives sustained significant weight loss. That's an interesting thing. So they did more testing on it and found that, yes, it does that in multiple populations. So they started getting approvals for that. Now that they've gotten even wider spread use, if that's even a word, that you now find that there's a significant reduction in stroke and in heart disease risk. And my guess is that as more and more approvals get on board and more use of this becomes even greater, you're going to see more and more side effects that are good coming from it in the population.
What do you think has contributed to the rapid adoption and popularity, though?
The biggest thing is that it's the lack of shaming. And what I mean by that is prior to this class of drug, you had people who were diabetic, overweight, obese, whatever you want to use, and they were shamed into, okay, I'm trying to control it, but I'm not getting very far. And that happened. Now you have where people are actually pronouncing, oh, I'm on ABC and look what it's done to me. I'm on ABC. And between social media and celebrities proclaiming it, it became a phenomenon. It hasn't slowed down.
So taking the GLPs isn't an answer in and of itself. Why is nutritional support still important for people who are seeing success with GLP-1 agonists?
Because the problem is there is no silver bullet, just in reality. Every plus, there are some minuses, and this is no different with GLP drugs. And the good news is there are ways to plug the holes
right.
in your nutrition that come from taking them. And at the same time, there are ways to multiply its effect for even better success.
I'm going to say this without judgment. A lot of people who are overweight are typically overweight because of a lack of exercise and because they're eating the wrong foods.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with relying on a drug is that you you are less motivated to actually fix the things that got you into the problem in the first place.
Correct.
And I think if you have less appetite, that doesn't mean you're automatically going to switch to eating more nutrient-rich foods. You're just eating less food. And I think that's where the real problem comes in. People aren't as hungry, but they aren't really changing what they should be eating, and they aren't necessarily exercising more.
You couldn't be more correct. Those are part of the things that have to be fixed. Inherently, if you eat less, but you're not eating what are referred to as nutrient-dense foods, you're going to create problems because you're going to be missing certain nutrients that your body needs. And you have to fill that gap or you're going to suffer other health issues.
So what are some supplements that you should be taking if you're taking GLP-1?
To fill those gaps?
Yeah.
One of the things that you want to make sure you do, for example, is take an organic sublingual active vitamin B12. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason behind that is that in your gut, when you take GLP-1s, your acid goes down. The problem is that when your acid goes down in your gut, you also reduce dramatically your production of intrinsic factor. And you need intrinsic factor in your gut to absorb B12 from your food and from your supplements. So you have to take a form that bypasses that whole system. And by taking organic sublingual active B12, it gets absorbed without touching the gut. It goes right through your mouth directly into your bloodstream. So you don't have to worry. You don't need intrinsic factor to absorb it. And that's important because B12, cognition, energy, endurance, things we all want. On top of that, there's the whole calcium issue. Mm-hmm. What they found is that people on GLP-1 drugs have reduced intake of food, as we know, but part of that is they also have reduced intake and reduced absorption of calcium. So part of the problem is if you don't have enough calcium coming in, your body will use its own stores of calcium, which are found in your bones, to keep calcium levels in your blood proper. That can lead to osteoporosis, a bad thing. So what you want to do is you want to take a clean, organic D3K2. And the reason you do is the D3 increases your intestinal absorption of calcium from the foods you eat and the supplements you take. And K2 binds the calcium that you do have to your bones, keeps it out of places you don't.
You said that one of the ways the GLP agonists work is to slow the ridding of stuff in your guts. In other words,
correct,
your functions slow down. So are there supplements you can take to make sure that you're, I guess, regular?
Yes. Well, that effect, it has two other effects.
Right.
The slowing of the emptying, what it does is, yes, it can cause constipation.
Right.
It frequently does. But the other thing it actually can cause is gastric upset.
Right.
Because
the bad bugs are still in your gut,
correct,
for longer.
Correct. And significantly longer. So what you want to do is you want to take a really good prebiotic soluble fiber.
Mm-hmm.
The prebiotic soluble fiber, what they do is it binds to the bad things, gets them out. And at the same time, what it does is it forms a gel-like in your gut and keeps everything going smoothly and nice without making it go faster, which is what you don't want from, because that would counteract part of what makes the GLP-1s work.
We've talked about probiotics, prebiotics, vitamin D, mm-hmm, vitamin K, and calcium tons before. Here's one that we really haven't talked about a lot. What is berberine? And how does it fit into this discussion?
Berberine is one of the compounds found in an amazing plant, one of my favorites, called golden seal root.
Mm-hmm.
Canadians love it. It's Latin binomial. It's Hydrastis canadensis.
Oh, okay.
It's ours.
Woo-hoo.
Let's own it. And what berberine does is it actually works with GLP-1s.
Mm-hmm.
They work on separate pathways. So the way berberine works is it actually helps your cells themselves better handle energy, better handle insulin. And in doing so, it helps keep your energy levels proper and it helps clear blood sugar from your blood.
Many people on GLP-1 medications report issues such as fatigue, muscle cramps, headaches, low energy. What do you recommend for people who might be suffering with those side effects?
Well, this is one of those, again, where by eating less, you're pulling out stuff your body needs. In this case, what they found with the research is most people on GLP-1s, the thing they give up the most on the dinner plate are actually fresh green vegetables.
Right.
And it's a problem because fresh green vegetables give us a lot of nutrients, but at the same time, they give us fiber and they give us chlorophyll, which is really important. So what they're recommending is that you take a chlorophyll supplement, and the chlorophyll supplement helps your body rid itself of some toxins. At the same time, it helps give you energy, endurance, without any additional calories. So you don't have to worry about reversing some of the good effects of GLP-1 while at the same time reversing some of the effects you don't want GLP-1 to do.
Okay, so I know, I call you a centrist in this regard. You advocate for sort of a balanced lifestyle.
Yes.
And I don't think you can exclude lifestyle choices from a program that would support weight loss, et cetera, with GLP-1 agonists.
Definitely.
So what would you recommend to somebody who's taking these agonists in terms of their lifestyle choices if they aren't already leading a healthy lifestyle?
First thing, look at your diet.
Mm-hmm.
Try and do that whole thing again. You have two choices in front of you. Try more often than not to pick the healthier choice. Make sure you're having a great amount of fresh fruit, fresh vegetables, pulses, lentils, etc. Add healthy things. Just because you're eating less doesn't mean you shouldn't eat healthy.
Right.
On top of that, regular exercise cannot be spoken enough of. It can't be. And it doesn't have to be going to a gym, pumping weights, and trying to be Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's just, even if you just get out and move, it's beautiful outside. Go for a walk for a half an hour a couple times a day.
I want to interject at this point.
Yes.
I think if somebody has previously lived a sedentary lifestyle, you're 100% right. The biggest change you're going to notice is going from doing nothing to doing something.
Correct.
That being said, what a lot of people aren't aware of is when you lose weight with the GLP-1 agonist, you are losing muscle mass in addition to fat.
Correct.
So I would say, particularly for people who are older, to make sure that they're eating protein so they can build muscle.
Yes.
And I kind of think they do need to do some resistance training. It doesn't mean you need to be Schwarzenegger, but you do need to either use bands or body weight or even weights to make sure that you're not losing muscle.
Yeah, I can get on board with that. Not a problem. The thing, though, with the protein, and I do want to stress this, do not take protein from one source.
Of course not.
Vary the sources every day.
Right.
Make sure you vary them, because there's a lot of people out there I've seen, especially on social media, who, oh yes, I get all of my protein from product X.
Right.
Or I only eat lean chicken as a protein. No, your body's not designed to do that. Your body is designed to have a very wide variety. And if you don't do that, you're going to have issues.
Right. I cut you off. Any other lifestyle choice you would recommend?
Basically, this is my own bent on it.
Yeah.
Stop and smell the roses.
Yeah.
That emotion is a huge factor in this. And there's no drug that's going to just do everything. Enjoy what you have. Stop and smell the roses. And life will be better.
I agree. Thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
That was Joel Thuna. We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back on The Tonic. Does your skin need some pampering? Treat yourself to a luxurious exotic oil from New Roots Herbal. Organic or wild-crafted, these oils are sourced from around the globe and tested to ensure purity. Never diluted, they're rich in vitamins and nutrients for radiant, healthy-looking skin. Choose from a wide variety including argan, rosehip, or skin lover's blend. Now available in a stunning gift set, perfect for that special someone. Available only at fine health food stores.
People just like you, with pain, inflammation, and mobility loss, are traveling to BioFlex Laser Therapy Clinic for treatment. The clinic is helping Canadians and patients from around the world move better, feel stronger, and live without limitations, all thanks to BioFlex Advanced Laser Therapy. If your goal is to reduce inflammation, relieve pain, and support recovery without medication, injections, or downtime, get to know BioFlexClinic.com. Trusted, non-invasive care.
Welcome back to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of The Tonic newsletter, Jamie Busson.
With a background in nutritional sciences, Lindsay Walker has built her career in the natural, organic, and wellness industry, helping grow wellness and lifestyle brands such as Genuine Health, Silver Hills Bakery, One Degree Organics, Navitas Organics, Green Space Brands, and the Green Organic Dutchman. A passion for brand strategy, creating great consumer experiences, and taking innovative products from idea to commercialization, Lindsay's goal is to get better for you products into the hearts and minds of more Canadians. Welcome to the show, Lindsay. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
So, although I'm in the industry myself, there's a whole sort of cohort of people out there speaking to health and wellness on social media, and their approach is a little different. And because of the format, all the details sometimes get lost. So I thought it'd be interesting to bring you on the show so we could discuss which of the trends that we're seeing on social media are actually worth investing our time, money, and effort into. Sound like a plan?
Sounds like one of my favorite topics to talk about.
So how can consumers make informed decisions about the products they're buying if they're following information on social media?
For sure. I think the big thing is to understand that social media is a great starting point to educate yourself or find out about products, but it's not necessarily the final answer. And I think a big thing to think about is virality doesn't equal evidence. So just because you're seeing it posted everywhere doesn't actually make it true. And I currently work at CHFA, or the Canadian Health Food Association, and we're really lucky to get to do a lot of consumer research. And I think one thing that I see is really promising is that in one of our recent studies, we uncovered that 75% of Canadians are verifying wellness claims using outside sources before purchasing. And that really tells us that consumers are becoming more discerning, which is what we want. So kind of coming back to your question, like I said, social media, great starting point. But you want to make sure you're looking at a couple different places to really understand, you know, are those ingredients backed by evidence? Are you buying from a reputable brand or hopefully a reputable retailer in Canada? And, you know, where appropriate, talk to a healthcare practitioner. You know, they've got a lot of great advice and they can look at your health in a bigger picture. But I think the biggest thing when you're getting wellness advice from social media is to remember that wellness is really personal, and it's not every trend is right for every person. So, you know, I would say, like, don't chase trends, but chase what's right for your own health goals.
It doesn't surprise me that 78% of Canadians who are looking at health and wellness products are verifying for themselves, because my experience in the industry is that those who are into health and wellness spend a disproportionate amount of their income and their time in researching those products. So to me, that's old news. It's just probably been eroded a bit by social media, I would think. Let's focus on some products that get hyped on social media, and then you'll give us your take. And it doesn't have to be a hot take. It can be like a cool reason take.
I love hot takes, though.
Okay.
Just joking.
So I exercise regularly, and I've been told by my trainer and others who also exercise that creatine is important. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, it's, you know, creatine is one of the most researched sports nutrition ingredients available. And you're right, historically, it has been kind of more associated with those who are into fitness or bodybuilders. But what we've seen in the last few years is that, you know, research has expanded considerably. So, you know, we already knew there was that evidence for muscle strength, for power, for recovery. But emerging research is really kind of exploring how creatine can be a useful tool in healthy aging, maintaining that muscle mass as we get older, and even cognitive performance. So, you know, I will say, what trending ingredient right now, I think we've seen an explosion over the past few years. Creatine's not necessary for everyone, but it is really useful for people who are doing resistance training or really, like I said, trying to maintain that muscle as they do age. You know, I will say, as always, you know, check with your healthcare practitioner to discuss supplementation. But, you know, I think for those who are staying active, it could be really beneficial.
Okay. So one thing I do take on a daily basis is magnesium. What are your thoughts on it?
I think for those of us who take magnesium, we love it.
Yep.
Really important for muscle, for nerve, for energy function. Also, really popular because of the role it plays in sleep and stress support. But I think the biggest thing that a lot of people maybe don't understand is that there are different forms of magnesium, and those different forms can serve different purposes. And so it's not kind of a one size fits all approach. You take your magnesium and you move on. Really important to, again, pop into your local health food store and have a conversation and talk to them about your health goals and what you're trying to achieve, and get download their knowledge on what the right form is for you.
Yeah, my experience is a lot of people that work in the health food stores usually have multiple careers. Some of them might even be naturopaths,
Correct.
and actually do know what they're talking about.
Yeah, especially the indie stores, great wealth of information.
Agreed. What about adaptogens? What are they for those who don't know?
So adaptogens are herbs that help the body respond to stress, and maybe some popular forms or names that people might be familiar with are ashwagandha, rhodiola, or ginseng. And I think the thing to understand about an adaptogen is that it doesn't eliminate stress, but it helps make the body better adapt to it. And again, talking about research, these are ingredients that have been used for a very long time, centuries, in traditional and ancient medicines, and a lot of promising research on them. But as I mentioned, there's a few different types, right? So you want to make sure that you're finding the one that's right for you. And I think a big thing when it comes to something like an adaptogen, where a lot of people are looking to it for stress management, is you really want to make sure you're thinking about stress holistically. And so what I mean by that is, making sure your sleep is locked down, your nutrition's on point, you are getting that daily movement, and then you start layering in products like this that could help with your stress response.
Okay, so I walk the floor at CHFA, and for the last couple of years, there's so many mushroom products out there. What are your thoughts on them?
Well, I think a clear distinction to make, and it trips a lot of people up at first, is we're not talking about culinary mushrooms,
No.
although those are great from a fiber and nutrient perspective. What you're seeing on the show floor, and glad you're checking it out, is functional mushrooms. And so again, some names that people might be familiar with are things like lion's mane, which is great for cognitive health, reishi, which is great for immune support, or even cordyceps, which are really great for exercise performance. And again, a lot of really great, interesting research growing in this field. Definitely a lot of promise on how they can support different functions of the body. But if you are dabbling, I'll give a plug to always make sure you're looking for that reputable brand and looking for brands that showcase standardized extracts and really disclose the ingredient amounts on label.
Another more obscure product that I certainly see on social media is L-theanine. Who would benefit from taking that?
So I'm curious, do you even know where L-theanine comes from?
I do. Unfortunately,
Oh, you're an insider.
I can't stand the taste of it. So I'm not a huge fan, but you go ahead.
Yeah, you're not alone, to be honest. I don't like green tea either, but that's really the main
Yeah, I know.
kind of source for L-theanine. And
Yeah.
that's what's great is we can get it in that supplement or extract form where we don't have to consume green tea if you don't love it.
Yep.
But what's cool about this particular compound is it promotes calm without the drowsiness. And so it's frequently actually paired with caffeine because research shows that it can help improve focus while reducing that jittery feeling that people can get if they have consumed too much coffee. So really popular for everyday stress or when you need a little bit of that energy to really focus and lock in. I know, a lot of students, for example, use it when they're studying. Because again, people say it gives them that calm focus, which a lot of people are looking for.
So I'm of a certain age where all I hear about is how important it is for me to get my protein. Is that what's driving everybody's interest in protein at this point?
It's definitely one of the reasons. Again, kind of like creatine, we used to think it was mainly for those who are really active that they had to hit certain protein amounts per day. But now we understand that it's really a part of healthy aging. Really important for muscle maintenance, satiety, blood sugar support. Also, appetites are shifting. A lot of people are on GLP-1 medications, and they're looking to kind of get the most bang for their buck with the food they are eating and maintain that lean muscle mass. And so, protein is the go-to macronutrient that people are looking for. And so it's really cool, I think, about this kind of explosion of protein is, again, as it's moved out of that more athletic community and into the more mainstream. We're seeing it move beyond bars and shakes and powders and really into formats that are super easy for people to take on the go or just to incorporate into meals and snacks to really make sure they're getting enough protein throughout the day.
So I do go to the show every year at CHFA to see what's new and exciting, but that's not coming up for a couple of months. But I know you have your ear to the ground. What are you seeing? Where are the trends going, and which products are interesting and exciting to you?
Ooh, yes, one of the fav my favorite parts of my job is getting to pay attention to kind of what's coming up. So, I think I'd say three things. First, women's health continues to gain momentum. I think we, continue to see the gaps in research and really starting to understand the unique needs of women. And I think as, more and more of that information comes online, I think we're going to continue to see really innovative products that speak to the unique needs of women throughout their life stages. I think a second thing is coming back to that protein conversation we just had. I think people are going to start to move beyond protein. And that's not to say that they're walking away from protein. I think protein's definitely still going to be a huge focus. But pairing that with digestive health and really starting to see products that also include healthy fiber, probiotics, prebiotics as well. And so, talking about the show, I think that next wave of innovation is really going to combine protein with those other functional benefits. And there's a really cool product that I saw on the show floor. It's called Pod Squad Snacks, and it uses bean-based. They're like a bean-based mini waffle. So again, you're getting that sweet treat, if you will, but you're getting the fiber and the protein as well. And I think more formats like that is what we're going to see on the show floor this year. And then the last one I was going to call out is just personalized nutrition. Kind of coming back to the beginning of this conversation that we had, social media can be such a great place to explore health and wellness and get information, but it can also leave people feeling really overwhelmed. Like there's a lot of wellness noise, take this, don't take that, do this, don't do that. And so I think we're going to start to see a lot of people look for simpler options, just ways that they can incorporate health and wellness into their routines, into their daily lives, in just like again, formats that seamlessly fit into things that they're already doing and really looking to people they know they can trust for that information.
Lindsay, is CHFA the show in September in Toronto? Is it open to the public if people wanted to go and sort of speak with the producers of these products?
Unfortunately, it is just an industry-only show. So if you do work in the industry, at a retail store, healthcare practitioner, or if you are on the brand side, more than welcome. But we do a lot of content coming out of the show to really showcase the amazing Canadian brands that are on the show floor, as well as the trends that we're seeing and that consumers can expect to see in the coming months post-show.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much. Loved it.
That was Lindsay Walker. We have to take a short break, but when we return, we'll discuss whether you're getting older or you're just getting weaker on The Tonic. I'd like to give a shout out to our long-standing sponsor, Omega Alpha. This company is 100% Canadian owned. Their team consists of allopathic and naturopathic doctors, nutritionists, researchers, and other scientific professionals, all led by their CEO, Dr. Gordon Chang. Formulations are created on their 40,000 square foot facility located in Toronto. Omega Alpha uses only the highest quality ingredients to manufacture the most efficacious yet price-friendly nutraceuticals. For more information about Omega Alpha, visit OmegaAlpha.com. Feeling tired, low on energy, or simply not getting enough vitamin B12? Discover the difference with Purely Organic Active B12. Made with premium active methylcobalamin, the natural form your body absorbs and uses instantly. Unlike common synthetic B12 supplements, Purely Organic Active B12 contains no colors, flavors, sweeteners, or preservatives. Just clean, organic, vegan support for energy, endurance, and nervous system health. Purely Organic Active B12. Pure energy, naturally made in Canada.
Welcome back to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of The Tonic newsletter, Jamie Bussin.
Ilya Alsok and Alicia Perez-Ayevskaya are the husband and wife team behind Youvolution.ca. Ilya is a strength and conditioning coach, former American football player, and someone who has personally worked through injuries and the physical demands of sport. Alicia is a fitness and nutrition coach who has lost over 70 pounds through healthy lifestyle changes without weight loss medication and has maintained her health and weight loss for over 20 years through nutrition, daily movement, and strength training. Together, they work with people of all ages and abilities, from youth and teenagers to older adults, including people living with Parkinson's disease and dementia, helping them become stronger, move better, and stay capable throughout life. Welcome both of you to the show.
Hi, Jamie. Thank you for having us.
Hi, Jamie. Thank you so much for being here.
So you guys pitched me with an idea on the show, and I should full disclosure, I train with Ilya, and he's helping me sort of update my workouts because I was injuring myself a lot, and I felt like I wasn't sure if I should keep up with the training I was doing or I should change things as I get older. So we landed on the topic, are you getting old? Are you getting weaker? Are you guys ready to go?
Yep.
Okay, so when you say you're not getting older, you're actually getting weaker. What do you guys mean?
You know, Jamie, I think it comes from something we hear a lot as coaches. And often our clients say things like, you know, I was able to do that, but not anymore. Or, you know, I was very athletic when I was young, but now I'm getting older. And part of it's true. We have to respect the age. Age has its rights. And we all know our body does change as we age. But the abilities that we lose are actually influenced by how active we stay. And working for so many years with people now, we've seen that the significant improvements can actually be made even later in life. And people might not even expect those improvements. We work with people in different ages. When we talk about people working with people in their 60s, 70s, or even late 80s, who with a gradual training and a proper approach, with a slight cleaned nutrition, can become gradually more comfortable, stronger, balanced, and the most important part is independence. That's the key. So that's why we wanted to talk about the difference between getting older and losing the ability of doing things that you love.
Well, because those two things are not the same. People don't wake up one day and all of a sudden become weak. It can start very simply. They stop going for walks, they stop lifting things, they stop getting down on the floor, they sit a little more, they become a little less active. And then one day they notice, wow, well, I'm not as confident in my body anymore as I used to. And let's make it clear, Ilya is absolutely right, the age has its place. However, how two people enter into their older age can be very different. So one person can be active, strong, and confident in their own movements, while the other may feel that everyday activities are becoming more difficult and feels more like a struggle. So we wanted to talk about what people can actually do to stay capable and live the life they want.
What are some things that people blame on age that actually aren't caused by age?
Oh, that's a great question, Jamie. And you know, I have a couple of examples for that. Many years ago, a man came to us and we did an assessment, talked a little bit, and reached a point. He said, you know what? I also have a very tight hip. He was in his 80s. So I asked the question, what do you think? What's the reason of causing of that tightness? And he wasn't happy about that. And he said, you know, I'm 80. And I asked, what about the other hip? And oh, nah, the other hip is quite fine. So I asked another question. So one hip is at its 80s and the other is stuck at 20s, you know? And the other example, which happened really recently, I have a man who came to us saying he's struggling to get up from the floor. And he wasn't like expressing that dramatically. He was like just accepting that fact and pushing the things that would happen with you when you age. But when we looked at it, we did the assessment, I asked a couple of questions, we worked through it, we got the idea that the pattern of going down the floor and standing up wasn't practiced for years. So we started very gently building a simple workout, because you can't put a 70-year-old in an extreme workout just to speed up the process, just that's reckless. So we start with simple movements, walking on the toes, walking in the heels, chair squats, was a slight upgrade every time from session to session, doing a little bit more. And eventually those movements became easier. And here's the time. It came to go down the floor and stand up. And you know what? He did it. He did it with a little bit of effort, with a little bit of struggle. But the best part of it wasn't just the physical improvement. It was that his mindset was now built around, I can do it. I want to do it. So the thing is, we don't stop moving because we get older. We get older faster when we stop moving.
And also, I think one of the most important parts that people blame on age is the balance. But we work with different age state with people with different age, starting as of like 7 years old kids and finishing with like 90 years old adults. And I can tell that even when you are 7 or when you're 90, people have the same issues with the balance, and it doesn't matter what age you are, because balance is very much related to the core strength. So if you don't practice your core strength, you can be off balance when you're 7 or when you're 90.
So, what should people do to stay strong as they age?
I think the biggest mistake is that people are waiting to be weak, to feel weak, and then they start doing something about it. You know, you don't need to train like an athlete. That's not the point, right? You just want to maintain your daily activities independently. And the thing is, you have to regularly ask your body to do things that are a little bit challenging and progress in that direction. That's the main thing. Lift a little bit more, push a little bit more. I don't know, squat, reach to something, move in a way or use the movements that you're going to use through the rest of your life. And the goal isn't to destroy your body in the gym. That's not the goal. The goal is to keep your body capable.
And it doesn't have to be complicated. You can start with your own body weight, some dumbbells, resistance bands, and even exercises you can do at home. The most important thing is it's that you're doing something consistently and gradually asking your body to do a little bit more and challenged.
Yeah, I want to add one more point. Adaptation is a fact. And that's not a motivational sentence here. It's a basic physiology. If you keep challenging your body, you will give it a reason to stay strong. And if you stop using certain abilities, eventually they become harder.
If somebody only had a limited amount of time to exercise and do that kind of work, let's say 20 or 30 minutes a day, what would you tell them to do?
That's also a great question, Jamie. And I know everybody has his own routines and lifestyle, and everybody's busy at a certain point. But I would tell to everybody, don't underestimate the simple movements. You don't need to be exhausted in your workout for it to be valuable or for it to be counted. You need to challenge your body consistently. That's the main purpose, consistency. I would choose simple movements to start with, the movement that we use through entire life, like sit to stand, grab a chair, put it in front of you, have a sit down, stand up. If that's hard, put your hands on your knees, push against your knees, stand up. Do that 5, 10 times. Easy, do 15, 20. You have to finish the movement with a slight effect of tiredness, if you know what I mean. And maybe that movement isn't impressive, but that's what we do through our life, right? And I would add also kind of a push-up variation, stand in front of the wall, push against the wall, or against the countertop, if that's easy, if the wall seems to you easy, or do a strict push-up. You choose the variation that matches your abilities.
Oh, I would also add the glute bridges because the hips and the glutes are very important for movement. And I would include the balance work, standing on one leg while holding onto a stable surface if necessary. And honestly, carrying grocery bags is a wonderful exercise. You can use, well, if you don't go for your groceries, like you can use the water bottles or whatever you have available at home, the books, your pads, your chairs, anything, because carrying something while walking is something we do in real life.
I would add a little bit more to that. Consistency beat perfection. Consistency beat motivation. So I would rather see somebody doing 20 minutes a day regularly, consistently, than somebody's looking for a perfect workout and never actually doing it.
Yeah, I agree. Time for one last question. And that is, some people think that they're too old to start exercising. What would you say to them?
Well, I will tell them it's never too old to improve your starting point. The goal isn't to get back to your 20s or your 30s. That's not realistic. Let's be honest. And it doesn't have to be the goal. The main question is what you can improve from where you are today. Maybe you can't lift a certain thing, or you can't, or you get exhausted faster in a particular movement, or just get tired faster doing activities that were simple. Well, that's fine. You will still be able to become stronger if you be consistent in your workouts and practicing. You can become stronger, better, feel more capable, and that's the main goal.
Well, I think, you know, the most important thing that I want to add from my side is the gym, the exercise, the fitness does not have age limitation label. So it doesn't say you cannot exercise, do fitness or enter into the gym if you are above certain age. So you can start at any given time, at any given point, at any given moment. Just start doing the things, start doing the exercises, move your body, challenge your body. That's the most important thing. The age doesn't matter.
Fantastic. Well, thank you both so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having us, Jamie. That was a great experience.
Thank you, Jamie. It was a pleasure being here in Tonic.
That was Ilya Alsok and Alicia Perez Arlovskaya. We have to take a short break, but when we return, we'll discuss why so many high achievers fall apart on the Tonic. I'd like to give a shout out to our long-standing sponsor, Omega Alpha. This company is 100% Canadian owned. Their team consists of allopathic and naturopathic doctors, nutritionists, researchers, and other scientific professionals, all led by their CEO, Dr. Gordon Chang. Formulations are created on their 40,000 square foot facility located in Toronto. Omega Alpha uses only the highest quality ingredients to manufacture the most efficacious yet price-friendly nutraceuticals. For more information about Omega Alpha, visit OmegaAlpha.com.
People just like you, with pain, inflammation, and mobility loss, are traveling to BioFlex Laser Therapy Clinic for treatment. The clinic is helping Canadians and patients from around the world move better, feel stronger, and live without limitations, all thanks to BioFlex Advanced Laser Therapy. If your goal is to reduce inflammation, relieve pain, and support recovery without medication, injections, or downtime, get to know BioFlexClinic.com. Trusted, non-invasive care.
Welcome back to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of The Tonic newsletter, Jamie Bussin.
Dr. Angelica Perez-Litwin, author of The Great Unraveling, is a licensed clinical psychologist with more than 20 years of experience working with high-achieving professionals. Her career spans academic medicine, group clinical practice, and large-scale organizational leadership. She's the founder and CEO of Lumen, a modern therapy and career advisory practice specializing in professionals experiencing career distress, and not the Lumen that's on the famous Apple series. Dr. Perez-Litwin has a PhD in clinical psychology from Fordham University, an MBA from Clemson University, and a BA from Columbia University. Her work has been featured by The Today Show, NPR, CEN, Forbes, PBS, and other national media outlets. Welcome to the show, Doctor. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me, Jamie.
So we're going to talk about high achievers and what may be going on beneath the surface. Why do you think so many high performers are struggling behind their impressive resumes?
Yeah. So, you know, I've worked for the past 20 years with high achievers, physicians, attorneys, executives, founders. And I kept seeing the same paradox or pattern. The stronger the resume, the greater their internal strain, right? The more that they were struggling inside, and they were struggling very quietly. They were not saying this to just everybody. But they would come to me and say, I can't stop thinking about work. I feel guilty when I rest. Or one meeting or one little comment at work can unravel them or can ruin their whole weekend. And so I started noticing that, and it didn't look like burnout. So I started keeping notes and observations. And the obvious question came up for me, which was, why are so many successful people quietly struggling? And that's really what the Great Unraveling book is about. And I believe it's because, and there's many reasons, but I believe overall that we have designed careers around performance, not around the human health. And so career health has become a big idea for me. And that's something that, you know, I hope I can continue to spread the word on. But we become incredibly good at teaching people how to achieve, but we're much less skilled at teaching them how to remain psychologically and physically and emotionally healthy while they are achieving. So we celebrate, for example, long hours or constant availability or relentless ambition, but we don't think about how their identity is tied to the work that they're doing. That psychological part is something that has not been unveiled. And that's really what the Great Unraveling is all about.
I kind of lived that. I was a commercial litigator for 20 years before I got into health and wellness. And I can tell you the culture at being in a commercial litigation setting, whether you're at a big firm or whether you're on your own, it's all about the hours. It's all about being there. It's a sign of, you know, great strength if you can put in tremendous hours and not be impacted by it. But as a cohort, I would say there are more addiction issues amongst and psychological issues amongst lawyers. I can't speak to doctors or business people than you might expect because it's so there's just so much pressure. I think it's the culture and the pressure. I can tell you firsthand that it was for me.
Yeah. And it's interesting you say that, you know, with your professional background as an attorney, but 50% of my patients and also I do executive coaching are attorneys. And attorneys do have, what happens with populations, for example, that already are coming in conditioned to achieve because they grew up having like an earlier conditioning around, if I achieve, people love me, I get attention. When you bring someone that has that early conditioning from their families into an environment like law, where there's so much competition, there's so much of you have to be available, there's billable hours you have to meet, there's just so much competition. That's really when people break down. And so I get to see those patients. They come to me and they're so ashamed that they have this great job, they have a big house, they have a family, that they have a wife, a beautiful wife, a wonderful person in their life, and yet they feel so, they feel unraveled. This is why I call the book Unraveled. They feel psychologically unraveled, they don't feel confident, they feel like things can fall apart at any moment, and anything that happens in the workplace becomes such a threat to who they are and their self-worth. And that really was what excited me about having this conversation, because oftentimes, Jamie, people think that this is burnout, and it is not burnout. Burnout is depletion, and burnout is about shutting down. A lot of my patients are at the top of their game. They're functioning. They're not disengaged. In fact, they're overengaged. They can't stop thinking about work. And so when we say to someone, oh, you have burnout, and go take a vacation, that's the worst advice you can give them, because they can't take vacations. They're checking emails in the closet and in the hotel because they're, you know, their families are complaining about them always being on. And so this is why it's so crucial, this conversation, for people to have the language to understand that, you know, burnout is one thing and it is a real thing and it does meet its own attention. But the career distress response, which is what I talk about in the book, is a whole constellation of symptomatology and experiences that are both physiological, but also emotional and cognitive, that affect not just the internal self, but also what happens around you. A lot of these individuals become very disconnected to their loved ones. They, you know, they're at a birthday party for their kids and they're on the phone. And, or, you know, their partners start complaining, you're here, but you're not really here, right? And so it's not just a physical thing or an emotional thing, but it's also how life becomes eroded. Their entire life becomes just focused around work, and there's a lot of overworking. And so in the Great Unraveling, I really sort of like dissect the picture of what it looks like to have career distress response so that people can have that language and feel seen and understand that it's not burnout. Again, burnout is a real thing, but that there are many people struggling and no one is talking about that internal struggle.
Do you think this phenomenon, the career distress response, is it the nature of the people who get into these types of career situations, or is it the culture of the careers itself? Because I can tell you, you don't start off wanting to work all hours or answering emails on vacation, but you end up there. So yes. What do you think it is, or is it a mix of both?
Oh, I love that question. You're good. Yes, what I have observed over the last 20 years is that there's three pathways towards what I call career identity fusion, which is really the psychological infrastructure of career distress response. And so people become identified with their careers or success in three different ways. And again, this is a very simplistic model, but let's just, for this conversation, three different ways. One, which is the most common, is children that grow up in families where achievement has to be earned, there's conditional love, they don't feel validated unless they do something or they are, they're performing or whatever that may be. They grow up really fast and they have to be somebody for their loved ones. I see that. The second one is when someone goes into an environment like, for example, medical residency programs or investment in banking, and they have no other choice but to identify with success because that's what's keeping them in that job, is giving them emotional safety. And so that's the second way. And the third way is, and this I've noticed, there are people that, for example, they go through a divorce or they lost a child or something big happened in their lives, and they lean into work. And it's just as a temporary thing, like work will make me feel better. It gives me structure. And they start feeling good when they succeed. And over time, what was more of a coping mechanism becomes more of something that they are psychologically attached to. And sometimes people have all of it or two of them. And so that's why this, you know, this idea of like, who are the people that end up having career distress response? You really have to peel that onion and really understand what is the foundation or, you know, that's leading to this pattern of behavior.
So what do you do if you're in that mix? I mean, I chose to get out of the profession because I didn't see a way of being effective or good at what I was doing unless I was really leaning into those hours or doing, I mean, you kind of need to do it if you're going to be successful. I think, at least that was my approach. With your patients, are they staying in their professions or are they getting healthy by leaving? What do you see? How do you get out of this loop?
Of course. So normally the first thing that people will come to me and say, like, I hate this job. I need to change this job. I'm making so much money. I don't know what to do.
Yep.
And what I say is like, hey, stop right there. Let's think this through. And normally I do an assessment because I do want to know, like, how identified are they with their careers? I also look at their past life, like what were some patterns growing up that they're repeating at work? So I do some sort of like inner work, which I also describe in the Great Unraveling. And I walk them through what I call a career harmony practice. It's a framework that I have developed again over the last 20 years that integrates like clinical psychology and integrates somatic work and also career coaching or career sort of redesign. And the idea is not to have to tell them, oh, you need to leave that job. For some people, however, leaving that job is the right thing to do in finding something that's more aligned with who they are. But oftentimes the real work, Jamie, happens, whether you're coming to a therapist or a career coach, in helping you sort of like, not detach, you know, your identity from work, but to expand your identity, to help people see that they're more than just success and achievement, and sometimes heal some of that wound that is leading them to that, and that would be therapy. And so it's really understanding, helping people, these high achieving professionals, helping them to reconnect to who they really are. A lot of these individuals have stopped, you know, doing things that they enjoyed, hobbies or spending time with friends from high school or college. They have really lost their way. They've lost their internal compass. And the very first thing we do is to help them get back to who are you? What exactly is it you want to do? How do you define success for yourself? Because they've been living life based on what other people and other definitions and other values, that whether it was culture or the work environment, their parents have given them. So this work, Jimmy, is not easy work and it's not very fast. It's something that, these are patterns that have been there for decades, and you really have to help someone see the bigger picture and get them and say, you have to be patient and get to know what's really at the core of this, like understanding their patterns, for example, helping them get more emotionally regulated, because a lot of these individuals, they will respond very emotionally flooded at work by just one little comment. So the work also involves regulating how you're thinking about things, quieting your mind, reconnecting to yourself, reconnecting to your loved ones, the people you sort of neglected. And then the last part of that is work redesign. So you redesign the way you're working, your relationship with work, how you see work. Should we perhaps consider you transitioning to another role within the company or leaving the company? Or do you want to build something new? I've had many patients who have gone on to launch their own practice. Actually, some attorneys themselves have gone on to, sign out there, and they're successful and they're happy because they have more control and more freedom around their time. And so it's an exploration really that needs to happen for us to help them.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show to explain that.
You're welcome.
Thanks to all my wonderful guests, Joel Thuna, Lindsay Walker, Ilya Alsok, Alicia Perez-Olivskaya, and Dr. Angelica Perez-Litwin. And thank you all for listening to The Tonic. You can listen or download this episode as a podcast with full show notes, contact information for our guests, and links at thetonic.ca. To find out more about the show, you can follow us at It's The Tonic on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. For more timely, up-to-date, and accurate health and wellness information, subscribe to The Tonic newsletter. Now distributed once a week, The Tonic newsletter with content curated personally by me will keep you in the loop. There's contests, prizes, insider scoops, and so much more. Visit www.thetonic.ca and sign up today. If you're interested in providing feedback or suggesting topics for the show, you know you can always email me at jamie@thetonic.ca. On our next show, we'll discuss the health and wellness issues that are important to you. Until then, this is Jamie Bussin, wishing you a healthy and happy week.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.